for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels, housing prices, complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., full-color photographs, 550 high-resolution full-color maps, and detailed information and analysis that you need. Order Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They are my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend, Joan Vian. Hi, Joan. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, it's good to be back, and hello.
Hello. Well, you were going to tell us a little bit about the current crisis that we have, the financial crisis. Ben Bernanke was testifying before the Senate the day before yesterday, and his remark was, we're fighting against the wind. We're fighting against the wind, meaning, well, Chris, how do you fight against the wind? You don't do it very effectively, and most of what's going on is not being done very effectively to meet the current financial crisis, because I think it's all contrived. And
right.
Well, you give us your views on what's going on.
Well, I absolutely believe the very same thing, that it is all contrived. In fact, I wrote an article for News with Views last year in September. It's also on my website, womensgroup.org, and I forget the exact title, but it's not that many articles down when they bring up my website. On the right-hand side, it says something about the credit crunch ruse is over. Now, it might have looked like it was over back in September, but you see, what started out as a problem with mortgages and subprime loans, the original liquidity crisis, has basically evolved now into a major global financial crisis. It's very interesting, you know, how they just sort of shifted it. I have felt very bad for a lot of people who have been basically looking at all of this and believing everything that they hear on TV, because, as you know, they always bring order out of chaos, but they create the chaos first. And in covering global meetings, I started covering global meetings 14 and a half years ago. One of the first things that I became aware of very quickly was the fact that we were looking at a very integrated world governmental system. And one of the things I needed to do was figure out who the players were. That took a number of years. But in the meantime, as I started covering meetings like the Bank for International Settlements, the World Economic Forum, the International Organization of Security Commissions, the IMF, World Bank, you know, some of those, the economic meetings, I became aware of a big evolutionary process that would be needed to go after the United States, because we have been the major holdout. The various laws in our books, the kind of patriots that we used to have in Congress and the Senate, we have been the holdout to a total world governmental system. And so, in fact, I was going through my book, United Nations Global Straitjacket, earlier this afternoon, and I was very surprised at how much I had with regard to the need to change our financial regulatory structure to meet that and to fit into a world financial structure.
And I think it's so important that our listeners out there need understand that this is the primary goal. They want a world government. They want a world financial structure. They want everything internationalized. They want to destroy the sovereignty of our nation. And, of course, Joan is having attended these meetings with these internationalists, knowing many of them, talk to them, listen to them talk, recognizes the fact that there are people at the highest levels of our government who do not believe in America, quite willing to use our financial and military power to bring about this world government, but they are internationalists, and their loyalty is to a different dream. Because, of course, in my estimation, they worship a different God. We'll be back in just a moment here with Joan Vial. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Joan Vial. And Joan, of course, has attended international financial meetings going back for 14 years. I mean, she's been literally at a dozens, probably close to 100, haven't you, Joan?
How many? 99.
99. Well, that's pretty close to 100. And she, of course, understands finance and the fact that there are people working within the world financial system and many people from the United States whose loyalty is not to the United States, but to this internationalist dream of bringing about a one world government, lowering living standards in America, raising living standards throughout the world. But of course, everybody then will be more or less impoverished under the control of a ruling elite. But as Joan has pointed out, the key is to change the financial structure of the United States. You picked that story up, Joan.
If I may, let me just give an overview of some of the things that I have seen that are contributing to where we are today and how all of these things are being used to basically call for a more sophisticated, a more global regulatory structure. I just wrote an article. It will be on News with Views, I think, tomorrow, and it's already, I think, on my website, that talks about the fact that if you're going to have a world system, then you have to have everybody on the same level, and that means you have to change the laws. Well, over the years, starting in 1944, we've seen the various financial, political, legal trade barriers between the countries be torn down. That was called globalization. That was a term that became very popular in about the mid-1990s, this whole idea of globalization. In fact, nobody really defined it, but globalization means an interconnected, an interdependent world.
And that really means the end of the sovereignty of our nation,
absolutely,
the end of our Constitution, the end of everything that makes America unique and different, because these leaders hate America. Their loyalty, they have a different loyalty. They're internationalists. Go ahead.
That's right. And part of the internationalist idea was that if you're going to combine everything and have every organization on the same page, what they started to set up and move towards was something called financial conglomerates. And I remember reading a Bank for International Settlements document about 1998 saying, what in the world is a financial conglomerate? Because they stated very emphatically that the United States was the only country because we had the Glass-Steagall Act, which came from the Depression.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest is Joan Vial, and she's simply talking about these ideas that are being pushed by the internationalists who control our finances and really the finances of the world. And, of course, they were basically talking about the Glass-Steagall Act. She was reading something that was written some years ago, and why our system was different than other systems. You know, because we had the Glass-Steagall Act, which kept our banks from being involved, or at least our investment banks from being involved in selling stocks. And a commercial bank couldn't sell stocks. But they've gone ahead and repealed that, haven't they, Joan?
They did. In 1999, the Glass-Steagall Act was replaced by what was called H.R. 12, the Banking Modernization Act.
Right.
And I followed that, and interestingly enough, I happened to interview Congressman Jim Leach very early on in my whole career as a reporter, not really understanding who I was, you know, interviewing and where what I was really starting to understand. When the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed, a number of things happened. The United States was able to merge banking and insurance with brokerage and real estate, hence financial conglomerates, something that was not allowed in the United States before that time because of the Glass-Steagall Act. So we started a Citigroup. Citigroup is a prime example of a financial conglomerate. Citibank went out and bought Travelers Insurance, and then they bought other brokerage firms, several brokerage firms, and they became known as Citigroup. Not only did the banks and the insurance companies not only did we get financial conglomerates, one other very important part is that we were also able to be bought up by foreign banks, brokerage firms, insurance companies. So that now you'll see UBS Warburg, you'll see AXA, you'll see all kinds of foreign names that basically tell you that we have been, that there's no difference now between our banking and insurance and that of another country. However, the only difference that still has remained is regulatory. How do you regulate banks, insurance companies, the financial conglomerates, when we have one set of regulatory rules and the rest of the world has a different set? So that's really where we're going, because now, in order for people to understand what in the world, what had to be created, what kind of crises had to be created for them to be able to do a fell swoop and get all of the things they needed to tie up all the loose ends to bring us into this major global regulatory structure. And they've been very well able to do that. They have done it, the subprime loan. Now, what a pity for all those people who've got caught in the subprime. All of the different things. Yes, there were some loopholes. Yes, there were mortgage brokers who absolutely stole and lied from people to make that commission. Should they be regulated? Of course. I'm regulated as a stockbroker. You know, everybody's got to be regulated. Surprise, surprise. Why weren't they regulated when we have a very smart Congress, you know? The subprime loans. Actually, they're a very small amount of the overall mortgage, number of mortgages in the United States. But the bottom line is, how did the crisis begin last August? Well, if you will remember, a handful of international banks refused to buy the paper of other international financial banks. All of these international financial banks have interlocking boards of directors. If you want to create a crisis, all one has to do is stop buying paper from the other one, and there you have your crisis. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was somebody coming out of Mongolia or some bank from Malaysia or Hong Kong. These were European international banks refusing to buy paper from all of their brothers, if you will. Then, you know, as we started to take a look at the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, that led to more mergers and acquisitions all over the world, cross-border mergers and acquisitions, whether they were corporations, whether they were banks or brokerage firms, as I mentioned. If you're going to buy and sell companies and insurance companies and what have you, corporations between countries, then that too calls for a change in regulatory structures. Then you had how to integrate the finances of the world. In 1971, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. Now we have a floating currency, and all currencies float, which means, you know, you can integrate the currencies, you can buy one another's currency, you can destroy one another's currency, whatever you want to do or choose to do, depending on what that country does or does not do with regard to what the powerful ruling elite tell them they need to do.
But I think the most important thing, we talk about floating currency, what we're really talking about is currency that is worthless, currency that is a fiat system. Every nation in the world is on a fiat money system. There is no foundation behind our money system. Countries can inflate as much as they want to, and many of them are. I mean, 10, 20, 30, 40% a year. Fortunately, of course, we're only probably 10 to 12% at the present time. They're lying to us about the degree of inflation, and
oh,
it's only going to get worse.
Oh, absolutely. But you see, what the floating currency will lead to, as you know, Dr. Stan, I have interviewed Paul Volcker on two occasions specifically regarding a global currency. He told me that in an interview I did with him a number of years ago when I asked him if he was pleased with the financial system that he helped put together in the 1970s. And he told me it didn't work very well, and I asked him what needed to be different. And he said, I think we need a global currency.
No,
and
no.
I said to him, what? Like a special drawing right? Well, at that point, he just turned his back on me, and the man's almost 7 foot tall, 2 feet taller than me, so I knew the interview was over. But the special drawing right is the currency of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which obviously is the currency of the United Nations. And several years ago, the Bank for International Settlements switched their accounting from the gold franc, the Swiss gold franc, to a basket of currencies. And I truly believe that what all of this financial hoopla is going to lead to next after the regulatory system is in place, and we'll talk about what that is and what it will be or what it will look like, is that it will be a need to change our monetary system because look what the dollar has done, how bad it is, this, that, the other thing. Excuse me, to a basket of currencies.
But I think the most important thing is you cannot have a world government if you have sovereign countries with sovereign monetary systems. What they have to do is destroy the monetary systems of our nation and all the other nations, and then they can come up with a global currency. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
What's it all about?
In also destroying the currency, in 1980, there was the Financial Deregulation Act that was passed. And the Financial Deregulation Act was very instrumental in doing a number of things. What I will mention this evening is very simply, it said for the first time in our history, investors in the United States could invest anywhere in the world. At the same time the U.S. was passing that law, other countries, other G7 countries, were passing similar laws. So that now you started to integrate the investments, the currencies, the financial systems of all the countries of the world. Then came the deregulation of airlines and banks, whereby, you know, that has just led to so much havoc in all of the markets and a change in how people live because, you know, deregulation also led to building up China as the slave labor capital of the world and moving a lot of jobs from America to China. If that was not enough, in order to integrate the finances of the world, you need a global stock exchange. And the whole idea of a global stock exchange, you know, Dr. Stan, at every turn, you know, I've written a book about Prince Charles, the sustainable prince, and his role behind the United Nations in so many activities and areas that are important, whether it's the environment or reducing the population or public-private partnership or changing the structure of the national governmental system as we've known it, only to understand that at every turn, leading the charge to integrate the world has been Britain. And so they were the first country, I think it was either 1986 or 1989, I didn't have a chance to check that year, to have what they called the Big Bang. And the Big Bang was the deregulation of their stock exchanges, where their stock exchanges went public. The New York Stock Exchange went public 2 years ago. The NASDAQ went public, I believe it was in 2000. And in the last couple of years, we've seen the evolution towards truly a global stock exchange whereby the New York Stock Exchange, I think 2007. You know, time flies when you're having fun. Maybe it was 2006, but not all that long ago. They bought the Euronext, which is the combined stock exchanges for the European Union. The NASDAQ then countered with buying part of the London Stock Exchange, which they recently sold to Dubai Port. Interesting. And the NASDAQ just recently bought the Nordic Stock Exchanges. So now we have this global stock exchange, and in order to have a global stock exchange, we go back to the regulatory rules.
All right, fine. Well, our guest is Joan Vian. We're, of course, talking about how even the stock exchanges are changing throughout the world, and they're becoming internationalized. And, of course, even part of our stock exchanges are being purchased by foreigners, and it's all been consolidated. Everything in monetary systems is being transformed as we move towards the global currency, the one world government. Go right ahead, Joan.
You know, it's very interesting. If you're going to have a global stock exchange and you're going to have cross-border activity and mergers and acquisitions, etc., you also need global accounting rules. And I became very well aware of that, and that also is in my book, Global Straitjacket. Global accounting rules. Paul Volcker, former Federal Reserve Chairman before Alan Greenspan, when he retired, started working on other parts of creating a global financial system. And one of them was to work with the IAIS, in Britain, which stands for International Accounting Rules. And just last year, the American Accounting Board, GAAP, GAAP, merged and agreed to use international accounting standards here in the United States. I remember in 1999 having covered the Bank for International Settlements meeting where they unveiled a new entity called the Financial Stability Forum. And they had said because of the crises in the Asian countries in 1996, 1997, part of 1998, that they had felt that they needed to bring together a group of people to oversee the financial system. And so they put together this Financial Stability Forum, which would be comprised of the G7 central bank governors, United States, Canada, Germany, Japan, Italy, France, Great Britain, as well as, I was told at one time, the presidents and prime ministers, but that's not true, various agents that are involved on a global level, such as the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the International Insurance Program, the Bank for International Settlements, and then the treasurers of the countries, as well as the regulatory agencies, and that they would get together and they would take a look at what's going on in the world given all these changes. And so in June, this was in May, I was at the Bank for International Settlements, May of 1999, and in June of 1999, I happened to interview Robert Rubin at a G7 press briefing. And I asked him specifically how he envisioned seeing the Financial Stability Forum functioning in the international financial architecture, and what would be the role of national regulators. And he looked at me and he said, "That's a funny question." And I said, "Well, why?" And he started, he didn't know what to say. He starts laughing. "Oh, I don't know." And why? Well, first of all, not a lot of people knew about the Financial Stability Forum. It wasn't like it was making headlines. And there I was asking specifically about a structure that I truly believe will be a very major component in the future. And I truly believe, and I've written about it, that it is the forerunner, if not it is, a global security and exchange commission.
And I think, of course, Robert Rubin would not want the people to know that people who are really working behind the scenes have to keep this all secret. They cannot let the public know what they're really about. and that is these traitors to our form of government are interested in establishing the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. It's all coming down the line very, very rapidly. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You picked the story right up there, Joan.
What I wanted to say about the Financial Stability Forum is that I have had opportunity, and people can go to my website, womensgroup.org, but I have lots of interviews from various key officials who served on the Financial Stability Forum with regard to its function. And the bottom line is that all these things, they've taken all these little steps here and there. It's all been done in secret, as we all know. They truly believe, since they're the ruling elite, that we are the really stupid, dumbed-down couch potatoes. And they've tried everything in the book to make us look and sound and be like what they want us to be, and that is dumbed-down couch potatoes. You know, they really don't want us to know truth, because evil operates in secret. The Financial Stability Forum, I was just looking for, here it is. They just had a meeting. They meet now twice a year, and they just had a meeting in Rome. I have tried to get into their meetings, but they're all done in secret. They do issue a press release as to what they discussed. And the bottom line is that, you know, they basically say that national authorities, you know, and supervisors and central banks all have to work together. Basically everything that we're hearing right now on TV from Ben Bernanke and Hank Paulson, who, by the way, came from Goldman Sachs, and many other congressmen such as Barney Frank and Shelby and Senator Shelby, Chris Dodd, all these people who, as you and I both know, wouldn't be sitting where they are if they were nationalists.
In other words, they're internationalists. They're dedicated to the destruction of our monetary system, our governmental system, our financial system, and they're, of course, using this current crisis to justify transforming our whole structure of our financial system. I think it's so interesting that they're talking now about, oh my goodness, we've got to give all this additional power to the Fed to completely redo our financial system because we have this terrible crisis. Never pointing out that they had created this federal crisis. You have to create the crisis before you can come up with a solution. And the solution, of course, will mean the end of the American monetary system as we know it, and certainly the impoverishment of our people.
Absolutely. It's very interesting. What is going on really should be called the Federal Reserve Act II, because the Federal Reserve, little by little, I have a newsletter that talks about how little by little they've been gaining more power. And, in 1933, while they were given the right to regulate commercial banks, they were not given the right to regulate international banks. And so now, not only through this whole botched up thing with Bear Stearns, you know, somebody had to be the sacrificial lamb. Wonder how much money those guys made to be the sacrificial lamb. This whole thing with Bear Stearns, the Federal Reserve came in through J.P. Morgan. Oh, yeah, you know what? I want to tell you something about J.P. Morgan. I don't know if you know this, but Tony Blair was just made senior advisor to J.P. Morgan Chase.
I bet he gets a good sum of money for that too, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, what a small world, huh?
And my understanding, though, is J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the largest holders of stock in the Federal Reserve System,
yeah.
Which for, and if you read the papers and they tell you it's a government agency that the government is doing this is a lie. This is a privately owned central bank. And, of course, J.P. Morgan Chase was given, well, basically a $30 billion gift, a $30 billion loan that they're now going to be able to use to stabilize Bear Stearns. And we're told, oh my goodness, this was done to protect America. No, this was done to enrich the stockholder of the Federal Reserve System, But they can't let the American people understand that these people give incest a bad name.
Yeah, they certainly do. You know, the well, what has happened, this whole thing with Bear Stearns, this whole thing with J.P. Morgan, you know, paving the way for the Federal Reserve to set precedent and make a loan at the discount window to an international bank. You know, that was all planned because that's all part and parcel of the greater powers to be given to the Fed, because they did not have control over international banks, real estate, or insurance.
And, of course, Bear Stearns was one that was not completely under their control. Basically, J.P. Morgan Chase, incidentally, that's a Rockefeller bank, was able to buy this for a little, Bear Stearns, for a little over $1 billion. They're going to get 42% of it, something like that. And here, why they're worth really probably hundreds of billions of dollars, and the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You're right ahead there, Joan.
The picture gets a little bit more murkier. It's not just, you know, the Fed now, let's just go back to the Fed for a moment. They are being given all of the other powers that they didn't get in 1933. They've accumulated various powers from 1933 until, let's say, 2007. Now they're in the process of getting it all. And this is very scary, because our stupid congressmen, if they were dead ducks before, now they're being plucked. And they don't even understand the power that they are regulating and delegating away. I mean, you know, people look at who's Timothy Geithner, the president of the New York Federal Reserve, or Bernanke, chairman of the Fed in Washington, D.C., and they think that these people answer to Congress. No, it's the other way around.
Yeah, Congress answers to them.
Absolutely. I mean, what a joke. All you have to do is watch some of the body language. I mean, you know, I've had to turn off some of the testimony, because our congressmen and senators are just delivering so much praise and adoration to these professional rapists, robbers, and pillagers of our monetary system and our sovereignty, about what a great job they're doing running the economy. No, they're taking more and more and more. I mean, part of the Banking Deregulation Act of 1980, I talked about the fact that they allowed for U.S. to invest in foreign companies and countries and vice versa. Well, one of the other things it did was it freed banks from having to pay a minimum amount of interest on certificates of deposit or savings accounts. And it deregulated interest rates so that today banks can pay what is called the going rate on savings, which might be 0.5%, and they can charge 35% on a credit card, or, you know, 5-6% on a mortgage compounded daily, you know? And that was part of the Monetary Deregulation Act and part of the pilfering that has been going on at every turn. And Americans cannot fathom or figure out why their money is not going as far as it used to.
At one time, of course, usury was illegal. And, of course, unfortunately, it is no longer illegal. At least in the Muslim countries, they don't allow it. Here in America, they use it to pillage. Our people will be right back with Joan. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Joan Vian of the Women's Group. Joan, would you like to get your website out, your telephone number, information about what you do?
Thank you. The Women's Group has been covering international meetings for 14 years. As I mentioned earlier, I've covered 99 global meetings, and next week at the G7 Finance Ministers meeting, it'll be number 100. We have books, we have newsletters, we have videos. Our website is womensgroup.org, WOMENSGROUP, womensgroup.org. I have a lot of commentary that I think would be well worth your listeners printing out, if they will go to my website and just print out everything on the right-hand side, maybe 100 pages there, but I'll tell you what, they'll get more information than they'll get in 5 years' worth of newspapers.
I'm sure they will. All right, fine. And of course, so again, that's womensgroup.org, is it, or womensgroup.com?
Womensgroup.org.
Okay, fine. And of course, Joan does do financial consulting. Do you want to just put out a telephone number on that?
If they are interested, they can call 301-371-0540, and we'll see if there's any way that I can be of service.
All right, fine. Will you go ahead then with the story of what's really happening to our world financial system as they create the problem, and then, of course, they've already planned the solution. What are shucks, it's such a terrible situation, the crisis, hundreds of thousands of people are losing their homes, and of course, how many more are going to lose their homes, and many of our financial institutions are having real solvency problems, but don't you worry, the privately owned central bank, that is about as much federal as Federal Express is, but you know, they've got to convince the American people that this is really a division of government, whereas basically they tell the government what to do. The most powerful man in America is never the president. He is the man who's the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And he isn't elected at all. He's part of a privately owned central bank. It interlocks with the other central banks of the world to rule the financial aspects of the world. So pick the story up there.
You know, I have to comment that at my first Bank for International Settlements meeting back in, 1998 maybe 1999, I don't recall anymore, I was sitting down next to a central bank minister. We were going to have lunch, and we reporters were able to sit at the table with them and interact. And I was having this discussion with the central bank minister from Austria, and so he was quite surprised that I would fly over for a one-hour press briefing, because that's the only time they go public, is this one-hour press briefing once a year. And I said, well, excuse me, I said, don't you all run the monetary system of your country? And he looked at me, and I said, well, excuse me, aren't you more powerful than the president of your country? And I don't know, I guess he wasn't ready for the truth, or maybe he's a little bit more stupider than I thought. And he just found that hilarious. And then when all the other central bank ministers got to the table, and in the middle of dinner, lunch, when I'm trying to be very unnoticeable, even though I was the only woman at that table, he opens his mouth and he says to Jean-Claude Trichet, who was then the central bank minister of France and who's now the ECB central bank minister, Jean-Claude, this lady says that Bill Clinton has more power than Alan Greenspan, to which everybody laughed. I laughed too, because I didn't know what else to do. But, they deflected it, and they were trying to make me look like a fool when actually I really knew what I was talking about.
And, of course, Alan Greenspan had far more power than Bill Clinton. It was just the opposite.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's the point I was making to him earlier. So now we're seeing the Federal Reserve become very, very central. We are seeing a global financial system. Hank Paulson said and has said on numerous occasions, along with Mary Shapiro, who was chairman of the National Association of Security Dealers. Now it's been called the Financial Regulatory Association, FINRA. Both of them said that the U.S. needs to move towards a more flexible UK-style approach to regulating its capital market to preserve its global competitiveness and to basically break with a rules-based system. The rules-based system goes back to the Glass-Steagall and the Securities Act of 1934. So what happened is Britain has set up what is considered the template for the regulatory system that countries should adopt. And it was Gordon Brown who, in 1998 or 7, and then in 1999, it became reality in Britain. They merged all their regulatory agencies into one called the Financial Services Authority. And so on occasion, Hank Paulson and Mary Shapiro and Barney Frank and Elliot Spitzer have all talked about, besides Dodd and Shelby, have all talked about a UK-styled system. In right before the credit crunch, or whatever you want to call it, started last August, on July 31st, the NASD became FINRA, and basically the United States adopted, it didn't have to be passed by Congress, they adopted the first of a British-style financial services authority. Now, hold on to your hat. The Financial Times on March 31st ran an article that if I had false teeth, I think they would have fallen out. The heading was Bush and Brown Plan Bank Watchdog. And it talks about how Gordon Brown, and British Prime Minister, and George Bush, who I think we all know who he is, or maybe even what he is, have agreed to step up cooperation over the crises in financial markets, setting up a UK-US working group that will develop proposals to monitor and regulate the banking system. It says that next week at the IMF World Bank, more details will be worked out, but it is thought that in the future, the two bodies, in other words, the US and the UK, it will seek to improve, and I quote, day-to-day cooperation between regulators in the U.S. and U.K. Now, what do we have here? We have not only a global financial regulatory system that's in the making, but we now have, hear me, the merger of the British and the U.S. financial regulatory bodies. Hello?
Yes. Well, they've worked.
Uh-huh.
They've worked.
The War of 1812 just was overturned.
Right.
Not one shot was fired.
And, of course, what people don't understand is there is an Anglo-American establishment. The leaders of our financial system have always worked very closely with the leaders of the English financial system, and together they're moving towards ruling the world. Go ahead.
Well, we're here. We're there. I mean, when you take a look at this whole thing with Britain, I've written several articles. They're on my website, womensgroup.org. They're all part on the right-hand side. There have been a lot of moves here in the United States to even change the structure of our Congress to be more parliamentarian.
Like Great Britain has a parliamentary government, and basically, you know, of course, everything comes from the top there, and there's really very much here. Our congressmen many times are not allowed to vote as they want to or represent their constituents. They are told how to vote by, of course, the heads of their party, and if they don't do it, they don't get elected next time. That's how it really works. It is a top-down rather than a bottom-up system of government.
Well, with a top down, as you know, we have no voice, and that's been very, very apparent. It's almost a joke if you call your congressman or senator. I remember asking one of mine, Connie Morella, who I won't even go into her, and she said, "Well, I have to vote my conscience." And I thought, "My goodness, what happened to mine?" You know. It wasn't like she even wanted to entertain any of my thoughts, because after all, they were more nationalistic than hers were. You know, with regard to this whole thing about merging our regulatory systems, that also involves the regulatory system will involve the banks, the brokerage firms, the insurance companies, the stock exchanges, and the real estate. I mean, did I leave anything out? Did I mention insurance? I mean, hello? All of these are going to be merged between the U.S.-U.K. or the U.K.-U.S. working group. I mean, so what does that say? That says that politically we've been merged, militarily we've been merged, from a trade standpoint we've been merged. We now have foreigners coming over America, and they are able to buy, I mean, you know, anything that their hearts desire because the dollar is so cheap. I mean, it used to be, you know, you only get 50 cents to every British crown now. And you get a little bit more with the euro. I mean, we are being plucked like our chicken. I mean, this is pretty serious. And so now you have our financial, the military structure. I mean, you know, we work with, we've fought wars with Britain, World War I, World War II, the war on terrorism. Our militaries are basically integrated. Britain no longer has to have any kind of paperwork if they want to buy something militarily from any of our companies. And now we're looking to merge the core regulatory system of our two countries.
But of course, in the process, the American dollar is being destroyed. The reason oil is going up is because the American dollar is falling. The reason prices are going up is because the American dollar is falling. The reason we have inflation is because they're massively increasing the amount of American dollars, and the average citizen has no grasp of what's going on. They're destroying the value of our currency intentionally, maliciously, and of course this thing is all coordinated by the Anglo-American establishment.
No doubt about that. They've come a long way from, you know, two when Cecil Rhodes died, to 1903 when they set up the Pilgrim Society. They have come a long way from the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the secret societies, and basically the rest of us have had to just hang on tightly.
Well, I think the time when we're even going to be able to hang on tightly will soon be disappearing, as, of course, they continue eroding the value of everything that most Americans have spent their whole life for, their insurance policies, their pensions, their annuities, their CDs, their bank deposits, anything mediated in dollars will be destroyed before this financial tsunami that we're facing
ends. Well, actually, Dr. Stan, it's already been destroyed.
Right.
I mean, truly, you know, the dollar in 1971, the dollar bought 3.65 Deutschmarks, which is now euros, and it bought 3.55 Japanese yen. And we're down to one on the yen. I mean, you know, that's a 70% drop in value. On the euro, we're down more than 70%. I mean, you know, I bought a bag of groceries. True, it was in a an organic store. You either try and protect your health by buying organic or you buy the cheap stuff. But either way, I almost fainted. It was $90 for two bags of groceries.
Right.
You know? And so what I have found, and I've gone through a lot of phases as I have covered global meetings. I've gone through a lot of feelings and a lot of back and forth. And it boils down to this. And on the back of my book, Global Straitjacket, I write, Jesus Christ was birthed in the middle of world government. The early church was birthed into the middle of world government. They worked around it without becoming part of it.
And you're speaking now, of course, of the Roman Empire that existed
that
at that
correct.
Time. And today we have an American Empire, but we haven't told the American people that yet. Nobody ever asked why we have troops stationed in 130 nations on over 740 military bases throughout the world. And, of course, supposedly there's no more threat from communism. There's no more threat from, you know, from... So why do we have all of our troops all over the world? Who are we defending against? Oh, it's Osama bin Laden. He's living in a cave, and he's going to take away our freedom. Go right ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, isn't that pretty pathetic for Americans to believe that? I mean, hello? Excuse me? America, with all kinds of gizmos that can take some kind of bomb from, what, 20, 30,000 feet up and get it down some little heating shaft anywhere in the world, and they can't find Osama bin Laden? I mean, you know, let's use some common sense here, because the bottom line is 2 and 2 do not equal 5.
Somebody just called in, and since we're running out of time, I just wanted to ask you quickly. Somebody has their money in a 401k, and they're foreign stocks in that 401k. What's going to happen down the line as far as the foreign stocks? Are they going to do better or worse than American stocks? What do you think?
Can't answer that. Have them call me.
Okay, fine. So that's it. And once more, then get your telephone number out.
301-371-0541 or 0540.
All right, finally, Chris said Joan is a financial consultant. And it's, unless you know what the foreign stocks are, what they're invested in, commodities, industry, why it's pretty hard to evaluate what's going to happen. But my fear is that certainly much of the American stocks are really going to be in trouble down the line. What do you think about that?
Dr. Stan, I make a living.
Okay.
On my understanding. And I have spent 14 years in 99 global meetings.
All right, fine.
You have to pay me for that information.
All right, fine. Well, all right, fine. But anyway, Chris, as we look and see what's happening, do you think the dollar is going to continue declining in value?
Well, this is what I think. I don't know. And the reason why I don't know is very simply that all these people who've crashed the dollar have large gains. And I think that at some point they want to take those gains and sell euros. Because you see, it doesn't make any difference whether you buy a euro or you buy gold or you buy a stock. They have the ability to crash it just through sheer volume of how much they buy and sell.
And so you're talking about how the way they manipulate the market by taking large short positions to drive things down?
Yes. I mean, you know, we truly, like I tell people, we truly eat from the crumbs from the master's table, but the bottom line is that our master is in control.
All right, fine. What you're speaking now, of course, is the spiritual element of this battle that that we're dealing with today. And, of course, there is really a spiritual battle behind all of the financial machinations of these evil and wicked people. There is spiritual forces at work. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I guess this is Joan Vian. And hang on. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joan, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I have 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Wow, we've covered a lot of territory.
Right, we have.
How do you wrap up, how do you fathom the information that has been put forth? For me, it has taken thousands of miles of travel. It has taken tens of thousands of documents. It has taken hours to put together questions. Understanding, well, I think this is where they're going, I think this is the agenda, but in order to figure it out, I only have one opportunity to ask the bottom line question. And so, what will it be for me to be able to determine, yeah, this is exactly what they're doing? I would highly recommend that, first of all, part and parcel of making decisions is being informed. You can't make any good decision unless you are informed. The second thing is, and maybe it's the first thing instead of the second thing, is you need to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. The discernment that the Holy Spirit will give you when it looks like you should do this, the Holy Spirit will be saying, no, don't do that. And you need to hear, because that is how people like you and I, who are in the same position as Jesus and the disciples in the middle of the Roman Empire, are going to live in a time of evil where we never know when we will lose all that we have. And so our faith has to be in Jesus Christ. We have to understand that He rules literally in the affairs of men. And that if we will stay close to Him, He will guide us, He will lead us, He will direct us, He will give us answers, and the bottom line is we will have peace in the midst of chaos, the chaos that these evil people have created.
Well, I think that's probably the only peace that we will actually find. I think we're moving into a very, very difficult time. But if we don't keep our eyes focused on the Lord and realization that He's in charge, we're going to be terrified of what's going to be happening. What do you think?
That's absolutely right. And I will even make a confession that at one point in looking at my life, I realized very honestly that I had given more trust to the Queen of England and the Rothschilds and the international bankers and the Council on Foreign Relations than I did to God.
Hey, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks so much, Joan. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope that you, of course, enjoyed our program with Joan. And just off the air, she was talking about how important her personal Christian faith is. And I believe that. I know Joan. I've known her for many years. And she's really a wonderful person. I wish her books, the Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, and certainly the Global Straitjacket, were still in print. They're excellent, excellent books to give you an idea of what's happening. Really, I think an excellent view of the overall financial system is in our talk. It's called The Financial Tsunami. It's given about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Comes with the syllabus. And everything we were talking about then is coming to pass today. And, of course, we'll be having a new talk available, Financial Tsunami 2, based upon a talk we gave this weekend, and going into all the other bubbles yet, Shania, that are going to have to face. As we begin certainly eroding the very foundation of the monetary base of this country. But if you understand that the ultimate goal is a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a new world leader, so much of what's going on makes sense. You did, of course, get our talk on the financial tsunami, and we recommend the syllabus that goes with that. We have a pamphlet called The History of Money. And then, of course, we have another little pamphlet. These are only $3.95 for the pamphlets. It's called Financial Meltdown, which goes into how this whole thing was planned. And we surmise why, but we are not certain whether Alan Greenspan did this because he's a good guy or a bad guy. But there is no question that the monetary stability of our country is under attack today. The most important book you can read is The Creature from Jekyll Island. And then, of course, you can get the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because it is a conspiracy. The book is written by Professor Sutton. And then, of course, the little book that tells what happened in France in 1789 when they tried the same illogical fiat money system that we have today that ended up with the dictatorship of Napoleon. The book is Fiat Money Inflation in France. It's an important document. We recommend it to you. We have something that Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Chuck Baldwin, put together. It's called the Freedom Documents. And it's all those documents that have to do with the foundations of our freedom, starting back in, with the Mayflower Compact, and then, of course, the various speeches given by George Washington, and certainly the various Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Gettysburg Address, the 40 documents that are the foundation of the freedom of our country. Understand that our founding fathers had a different view of government. They wanted a nation where men could be free, where the power of government was limited over the lives of the people. They wanted a stable currency. They did not want a fiat currency such as we have. They wanted a currency that was tied to gold and silver because they knew eventually why a fiat money currency would be destroyed. Between 1971 and the year 2005, they increased the amount of money in circulation in the United States 12-fold, and that was 2005. This is covered, of course, in our little pamphlet called The Financial Meltdown, as Congressman Ron Paul is trying to bring out the information in his interchanges with Alan Greenspan. And as Congressman Paul said, this whole thing is eventually going to collapse. The only question is, when it does collapse, what's going to happen? Are we going to end up return to a free society, or are we going to live in a totalitarian dictatorship? And I believe that that is the real question before us now. Because there's no question at all in my mind that we're headed for a financial collapse, and you better begin protecting yourself and making your plans accordingly. But even more than that, you need to be certain you have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, because if you do not, you are not going to get through the difficult times that lie ahead. As freedom becomes simply a remembrance of things past, as they suspend our system of constitutional law, and if you've not, of course, read my pamphlet or, pardon me, heard my talk on the planned police state and got the syllabus at the planned police state, get it. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5K.